Welcome, my friends, to the Generations Radio broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host, with you today, broadcasting from my basement out here in the Eastern Plains of Colorado during a period of time in which we see a significant rise in big government. That is, big socialist governments. And I've been studying the history of socialist governments from the beginning of the 19th century, from Jean-Jacques Rousseau onwards into the socialism or the social experiments of the 1830s, 1840s, and then onwards into Karl Marx and the rise of socialism in the 1920s and 1930s in America. So America has seen a tremendous rise in big government tyranny over the last 200 years. And we've also seen something of a growth of anarchy. And the anarchy movement seems to be increasingly popular today. But both of these are aspects of autonomy. And autonomy is when man attempts to be a law to himself, man attempts it when he turns himself into a god. So the individual turning into a god produces anarchy. And then the state wants to be a god, and that's man in corporate form. So when all the guys get together and say, hey, let's set ourselves against the Lord and against his anointed, saying, let us break his bands asunder, that speaks to the breaking of God's laws and the replacing of God's laws with man's laws. So when the state wants to be God, we find tyranny. And believe it or not, the democratic state has produced the most tyrannical governments in the history of the world, as far as I can tell. There have been tyrannical governments, but in terms of governments reaching into the lives of hundreds of millions of people and controlling almost every single aspect of human action, that is new in the history of the world. We have seen something of an Orwellian 1984 model repeated in most of the developed nations around the world. So, but the knee-jerk reaction to socialism, big government, tends to be anarchy, and that's the other ditch, of course. So the only answer to moderate between the tyranny of the big government state and the anarchy of the individual has to be God's law. And so the gods of the copybook headings limp up to explain it once more. Again and again, we come back to God's law as the solution. How in the world are we going to navigate between the horrific nature of anarchy and perpetual revolution versus the tyranny of man? How do we navigate between that? But by the laws of God. Teach your children God's laws as you sit in the house, as you walk by the way, as you rise up, as you lie down. It is the only hope for a stable social system. God's law. Let's come back to God's law again and again and again as the only solution to deal with the tyranny, the tragedy, and the horror of autonomy and man doing what man wants to do outside of the rubric of God's law. Well, does the Bible allow for government? Does the Bible establish government? Of course it does. Does the Bible institute a police state? We're going to talk about that today on this edition of the Generations broadcast. Christians must be careful not to support the Neros, the Hitlers, and the police states, but at the same time, we've got to be careful not to tip into anarchy. So that's the balance we want to deal with on this edition of the Generations broadcast. The operational passage on the civil magistrate, of course, shows up in Romans 13. Let every person be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those that exist have been instituted by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authorities resists what God has appointed, and those who resist will incur judgment. For rulers are not a terror to good conduct, but to bad. Would you have no fear of the one who is in authority? Then do what is good, and you will receive his approval. For he is God's servant for your good, but if you do wrong, be afraid. For he does not bear the sword in vain, for he is the servant of God, an avenger who carries out God's wrath on the wrongdoer. Now, this passage prescribes and describes, I believe it's both, this passage prescribes and describes what a government is and what a government ought to be. And that is one that punishes the wrongdoer and provides for peace for those who are doing that which is right. All right. Well, joining me on this edition of the broadcast to talk about the police and the question of the police state and the rising police state that we're seeing in this country, Joel McDermott from American Vision joins me now. He's written extensively on the subject. Joel, welcome back to the Generations broadcast.
Great to be back, Kevin.
Let's talk about the police state. Let's talk about anarchy, these sorts of things. Do these things trouble you?
The police state troubles me far more currently because it is a very much nearer reality than anarchy is. Of course, anarchy is always a danger as well, but tends to be so unstable that it always evolves into some new form of police state.
Yeah, yeah.
We've seen that throughout history.
Yeah.
Anarchy cannot live. And in fact, it begins as Genesis, honestly.
Yeah.
You know, Cain is kicked out into the wandering, and he immediately builds a walled city and names it after his progeny to become the legacy of man. And so it goes on to that. The next thing you have Babel. And every city that man builds becomes a center of power and conquest and stuff of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
So even when you have men who pretend to be a god unto themselves, and every man does what's right in his own eyes, for example, in Judges, it always devolves into some powerful leader rising up and unifying that lust into a powerful empirical state.
Mm.
We have been suffering, I think, from that in the U.S. for a long time. Because we do look to centralized power for answers to our problems. And that has always led to trouble. When you depart from God's law and a society built on love to look to government as a centralized power to pass laws, to use the police or other government agencies. And by the way, police, we tend to think of the guys in the blue cars with the lights. You know, but it's really a much larger concept. It encompasses everything. Anybody who's acting in any executive capacity or any government agency is de facto police, and they are de facto a form of standing army. And so that's the way we think about this. For what reasons do we institute a standing army? And those are very limited in Scripture, of course. So we need to get back to biblical thinking, ask ourselves, what are the purposes that Scripture provides for these institutions and these agencies and such officers, and how does it limit them? Because we are not only so much worried about their existence and their justification, but we have to also be concerned why Scripture puts limits upon them. And to me, when you start talking about the police state, that's the most urgent concern, because when you start verging on a police state, you're saying this thing has lost its boundaries, or has overflowed its boundaries, its limitations. And that's the question we need to be asking once again, is where are the limitations? And I think we too often we turn the question on its head. We ask for a police force with unlimited power and very limited restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
So that when you have a crisis, or there is some kind of a, you know, in one of the rare cases, as most people see it, of abuse, that we want to pass a law that such abuse can't happen again.
Yeah.
But the unlimited power in general still stays there. The biblical doctrine of power is the opposite of that. Because of the depravity of man, we always assume that any power granted will be abused. Not that it just can be, that it will be abused.
Mm-hmm.
So we only grant, we grant freedom as a blanket issue. And we grant power to government only in very limited, very narrowly defined prescriptions. And that's the mentality we need to get back to. That's the mentality we were founded upon as a nation, because that's what the Bible teaches. And we've gotten so far from it because of various of the fears of man.
And we want to remind the frogs in the slowly boiling water what has happened over the last 40, 50 years, of course. As you mentioned, the entire bureaucratic system has increased exponentially over the last number of 50, 60 years. There was a single government employee for two manufacturing workers in the 1960s. Now it's the other way around, two government regulators per every manufacturing worker in America, which means that we've seen a 400% increase in tyranny. Also, from 1982 to 2007, according to Reuters, police funding rose from $20 billion in 1982 to $100 billion in 2007 in this country. That's a 500% increase in just, 20 years, against an inflation increase of 100%. So five times the rate of inflation. So obviously the police state is increasing. In fact, we were just out in my little hometown, Grants Pass, Oregon, just a tiny little town in southwestern Oregon with my parents. And my nephew had been downtown and visiting the police station. The huge These huge armored vehicles look like tanks. Now, you know, what a tank has to do in a tiny little town where, you know, they're making an arrest a week. It's hard to imagine what they're doing with armored vehicles and tanks in these tiny little towns out in the middle of nowhere America. I just don't get it, Joel. It just seems to me there is this slow creep going on. Is America turning into a police state, you think?
Well, the question you ask is, you said, I just don't get it. And it is difficult to get until you go back to Scripture.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what American Christians, Americans in general, Christians especially, need to get back to. Get back to what Scripture tells us about these things. Consider the classic passage on the police state is 1 Samuel 8. That passage does not start out with a mob or anything like that. It starts out with the elders, the rulers of the city, coming to Samuel and saying, we are losing faith in this biblical system. It doesn't seem to be working well for us. We want to have a large, powerful army. We want to have a king, national military king leader, like all the other nations around us that we see as threats. Okay, and what was the primary problem there? It was that God told them, when you live in this land, you don't fear the nations on your border. You don't fear them. No matter what you think of their military strength or their attitude or what they look like, you don't judge your circumstance. You don't judge based on your circumstances. You judge based upon my word. Instead of being faithful to what God promised to them, they feared the appearance of man, and they told Samuel, give us a king like other nations. So Samuel doesn't want to do this. He goes to God, and God says, give them what they asked for. They're not rejecting you. They're rejecting me. Okay, we need to get back in this mindset that when we allow these things to happen, when we start fearing about the circumstances, when we start allowing government officials who have a stake in this and their buddies who make money off of selling this equipment and the military contracts that make billions off of selling the equipment to local places, all of that kind of super infrastructure, if you will, all of the people that profit from this, the drug war and the whole bit, come to us and they make us afraid by saying, if we don't have these things, our nation will be fill in the blank, overrun by drug dealers. We will have criminal immigrants coming across our borders. That's not really what happens, but that's the pictures we get. And you can fill in the blank. Honestly, the drug war has hurt far more people than criminals it has protected. It has hurt far more innocent people. And it's cost far more billions of dollars from innocent people and innocent taxpayers than it has prevented anything.
Mm-hmm.
But in the process, it creates an industrial complex for the sale of arms, the sale of gear, and billions of dollars are funneled through from contractors, through government agencies, to local police departments. And then what is the next thing? Well, Really, there's a question of supply and demand, because a lot of times some of these vehicles are things that were left over from Afghanistan or whatnot, and how can we repurpose this and sell it? But in many cases, it's just the local saying, we can pad our budget by $10 million if we apply for this government grant, and we can get this armored vehicle, and it'll put more cops on the street. You know, and that one phrase there has become a catchphrase also.
Mm-hmm.
We'll put more boots on the street. And it'll make us safer. And in the long run, there's really no statistics or studies that prove that.
Mm-hmm.
But it becomes a fear-mongering campaign. If we don't have more police on the street, we will have more crime.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that's ever been proven.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, in many cases, it hurts more innocent people when you look at it, and all the money going. So I think we fundamentally need to rethink this. What is our starting point as Christians? It cannot be a fear-mongering campaign.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be one based on practical solutions. It's already begun in nations like Portugal and nations like Italy, that there are programs for drug offenders that are based on true rehabilitation. Work, thrift, training, you know, and get them out of this criminal model that causes so much trouble. And focus on that. That is a far more biblical model of restoring someone who's addicted to drugs than locking them in a cage, tagging them with some kind of an offense, a felony offense even, that may follow them the rest of their life. They can't get a good job the rest of their life. And then they're stuck in this system, which when you go on probation, you still have lost all your right to vote, the right to serve on a jury. It's basically a form of slavery.
Yeah.
And that goes along with all the rest of the stuff. And it includes, like I said, you can't get a good job. And in the system of probation, they end up start charging you for all the fees. So now the government, who is providing these services to tag you and monitor you and drug test you periodically, to visit you at your house randomly, and to be your probation officer, all of those are fees and services that the person on probation has to pay. So now the government becomes dependent upon keeping people. And so there's a profit motive in policing in that program.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing is a mess from beginning to end, from the armored vehicles to the SWAT teams that have ramped up, I forget, from virtually nothing in the 70s to like 250 SWAT raids per day across the U.S. for the smallest infractions. We see news stories from that all the time now, of SWAT teams that broke into the wrong house and killed an innocent person.
Mm-hmm.
This is just, it's madness across the board, and it needs to be completely rethought.
How does biblical law, how does biblical law address this? Because it seems to me we would clear a lot of the mess out if we just bring God's law to bear. Now, God's law does not address drugs as a crime, or the possession of drugs, at least, as a crime. However, it does have pretty strict negligence laws and strict laws relating to violent crime, doesn't it?
Yeah, and be sure, it's not just the laws on the drug war. It's across the board in many areas as well, and the way that power is treated. Here's a starting point I'd like to have a lot of times when I talk about this, and it is, how was America established? What was our independence based upon? And, of course, most Christians who have any study in the history of Christian America, they can go back to, you know, the laws of God and nature, the Declaration of Independence. And, you know, we have these rights given to us, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, all of that. A lot of people aren't aware of the story earlier than that. We've heard of the Boston Tea Party, some of that stuff. But the primary, like the beginning point, was a court case called the Paxton case. And it was a court case because the king had passed laws that also these laws led to the Boston Tea Party. Some of these laws gave his agents, which were essentially the police at the time, blanket search warrants. They were allowed to go from house to house, and if they had any suspicion that any particular warehouse or business or house or whatever was storing contraband, right? In other words, ships were trying to evade the king's new taxes by smuggling goods in, particularly rum and things of that nature. He empowered his police to go, and if they were suspicious that people were harboring this stuff in their warehouses or whatever, they had a standing power to break the locks and search. And these cases were brought into court in a court case, a famous case called the Paxton case. And one of the gentlemen that stood up in defense and just berated these laws was a man named James Otis Jr. Okay, most people have never heard this speech against what at the time were called writs of assistance. And they were essentially blanket search warrants, which is the same thing that a police officer has now when he pulls you over if he suspects anything. And it doesn't take much for him to suspect anything because it's purely subjective on his part. Even if he turns out wrong later, he'll be exonerated in court because it was just a mistake. So, I mean, there's a whole strings of court cases on this. So James Otis Jr. stands up and gives a speech against these blanket search warrants, says this is against the common law, it's against God's religion, and this speech basically transforms the minds of everyone in Massachusetts and fires them up to stand up in independence and assert the rights that they had been taught in their pulpits up until that date for 100 years. In the audience of that court case was a young lawyer, and he went back and later in his life was writing this history, and he said, right there, that day, American independence was born. And that young man's name was John Adams. Now, he understood that the linchpin was the moment the king crossed the line with his police that we had to stand up and say, we do not allow this to happen. And we added the Fourth and Fifth Amendments to our Constitution for that very reason. The right against incriminating yourself and the right against unreasonable searches and seizures of property. Those two things protected them from, they thought, into the future. We have blown through those amendments so many holes today. And there are so many walkarounds. There are so many things a police officer can say or do to get you to unknowingly waive those rights to where they essentially don't exist. And if you don't know they exist, he can lie to you. And it's perfectly acceptable in court that he lied to you to get you to do something he wanted to do to allow you to search.
Mm-hmm.
And that will mean nothing. So those rights are there, but they're basically a wax nose for the courts. We don't uphold them anymore. And the reason we don't is for decades now, we've been telling people we must get tough on crime. These drug criminals are going to, run over us if we don't. And so we cede to the government more and more power.
Hmm.
And the court says we must allow them to have more and more power. That's... until the time comes that we don't have those rights anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Those rights that came from the Bible, those basic rights that started the move toward independence, those rights we wanted to enshrine in our Constitution. We have them anymore, that they're in name only.
Hmm.
And anybody who, like me or you, who stands up and says, wait a minute, we want to get back to what these originally were supposed to be, is considered a radical and almost an anarchist, because they dare speak against the one group that's never to be spoken against, aside from public school teachers, and that is the police.
We get back to biblical law, Joel, it seems like there is an instance in which judges, that is, courts, are required to inquire diligently into the facts of the case. Doesn't that require some kind of investigative work on the part of the courts?
That's exactly where it starts, and there are numerous laws about this for court procedures. An officer or agent of the government should not be allowed to do any search whatsoever without a warrant.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, before, I believe it was the 1920s, with certain exceptions, which I think we can talk about in a moment, a sheriff or a constable could not even make an arrest without a search warrant, without an arrest warrant, unless he witnessed a felony taking place in person. That has long since been eroded as well.
Mm.
One of the things that eroded it, and this is a major project I'm working on right now, is the history of slavery and racism in America. But one of the things that eroded it was the ending of slavery in America. And in both the North and the South, but certainly more so in the South, they overnight transformed what had been the laws for keeping slaves. They transformed those into the laws against free blacks. And it was a system of segregation. Many towns in the South, many large towns, created police forces for the first time in order to corral and harass and suppress their black populations that had recently been freed, essentially to keep them huddled in ghettos so that they would not come into town. And they passed all kinds of new ordinances and empowered these new officers to enforce them upon anyone who was black. Now, actually, this stems from the famous Dred Scott decision in 1857, which you probably recall,
mm-hmm.
and which is looked at today with abhorrence by virtually everyone. When Chief Justice Taney wrote his decision, he was trying to decide whether a particular case, or whether a slave was allowed to be free when they moved into a territory in which slavery didn't exist. I believe that was the technical issue. In the process of that, he had to decide the question of whether blacks had civil rights under the original Constitution. And he ended up having to say, no, they don't. They're not considered citizens. They are not. No African is recognized in any way, shape, or form by the rights of the Constitution. And he had such lines in there, he said, if we did that, of course we'd have to allow them to have guns, and who wants to give blacks guns? And he lists all these things. And one of the things he ends up saying in there was that if this were the fact, and all of these rights applied to blacks, then all of the police powers we have in the South to control blacks would be unconstitutional. Now, the irony of that is that the same types of laws and institutions that were created to control blacks eventually became used across the board as the general police powers in society. And nobody has batted an eye at this. Nobody has asked a question. Because Chief Justice Taney said, if the constitutional rights applied, those police powers would be unconstitutional. We have just accepted that fact, that these things are constitutional, and the things we allow police to do regularly are constitutional, when in fact they grew out directly, historically, organically, out of a system of tyranny that was not constitutional.
What are the proper limits? Joel, why don't you summarize it real quickly? What are the proper limits, do you think, speaking from a biblical perspective, for powers relating to investigating crime?
Absolutely. It has to be based upon probable cause and a search warrant written by a court.
Okay.
If not, they should not be able to search without your permission.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, obviously, this admits to many nuances. If you're at, say, a police officer or some agent of the government wants to inquire of you, you should not have to be a lawyer and know all the precedents of the court cases to be protected by your right, such that they could lie to you and say, yeah, anything you tell me right now is protected, you can't get in trouble for it, when in fact you can. That should not be held up in court. So there's a whole string of things like that, that the presumption of innocence ought always to prevail. That is the biblical doctrine. The house, the privacy of the household is always protected. That ought not to be compromised.
Mm-hmm.
The powers of the government to arrest people and detain them should be strictly limited based on search warrants and things of that nature. There are 100 ways, Kevin, that we should look at reforming the system, including immunities for prosecutors, immunities for police who lie, the insurance systems that pay when departments do actually get in trouble and held accountable and they get fined. They don't have to pay that. It comes out of an insurance policy that's paid for by taxpayers. So there's virtually no accountability. And that's the other great thing, Kevin, briefly, is agents of the government ought to be held accountable to the exact same law as the people are. And when they're not, you've created a two-tier system of law in which there's going to be tyranny, and you can't get away from that fact.
You know, I wonder how much biblical justice would actually deter crime. If you brought biblical justice to bear and you were hanging murderers on Saturday morning in the county courthouse, would you really need a police car at every corner watching for acts of violence? In other words, you know, I think that our society is looking to police to deter crime, but in the end, it seems that only prosecution of real crime and bringing biblical justice to bear would be the only possible way to deter crime in any substantial way.
Yeah, you nailed it, and the Old Testament law says that specifically in some of those cases that this punishment shall be meted out so that the rest of the people will hear and fear.
Yeah.
I mean, there is no better deterrent than justice.
Yeah.
There's no better deterrent to injustice. You know, when that comes in regard to theft, we need restitution. Thankfully, many states are getting back systems of restitution, even though it's still give and take depending on where you're at. But that's a big thing. If the victim is the one that has the right. The victim needs to be made whole, and the person who perpetrated that crime should be held accountable. What we've done, we've created a system in which criminals aren't necessarily held accountable, and in many cases, when the government itself is the criminal, it's not held accountable at all.
Hmm.
So we need to justice across the board. And what was it? The prophets are continually crying out for justice.
Mm-hmm.
Justice for the poor, justice for the minority, justice for the widow and the orphan, justice for everyone across the board.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we talk about these issues today, the politics have become so polarized that you can't say, I'd like to help with issues of race without somebody thinking you're a radical anarchist Black Lives Matter advocate. Yeah. You know, you immediately get pigeonholed into one side or other of a debate. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If you say, you know, I don't like Trump, but I think he did a good job here.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to say, oh, you're a radical Trump supporter.
Right.
You know, it's just, it's terrible.
It's
we
crazy.
Can't even have these discussions mm-hmm. among Christians.
Yeah.
Who should have been leading the way on all these issues from day one. And the churches have continually been trying to win the approval of the world rather than teach the world what a city on a hill looks like.
And that's because the standard is not the Republican national platform. The standard is the holy law of God as revealed to us in the Old and New Testaments. And that's the real fundamental problem. I think a lot of people think conservative Republicans are supposed to be pro-police state advocates. And Christians really need to avoid the police state mentality. While at the same time, we respect the civil magistrate's duty to punish crime. So how do we maintain that balance? Wrap it up. Give us some basics, a basic perspective for Christians.
It is first, especially what I said earlier, is get the biblical view of power correct. Huh. It is not a blanket power given to the government that we try to restrict with specific limitations. It's just the opposite. It is a blanket view of freedom for the people. And when we need to give the government power, we do that with strict limitations because you're dealing with the depravity of man. People always think, when they think of the depravity of man and sin, they think of the criminal. God is far less worried about the criminal than he is about giving power to the government. And you give power to the government, you create a criminal class because you're dealing with the depravity of man, and that's what needs to be limited. When it comes to actual criminals on the street and between man and man, you use the institutes of justice that he's given us in strict limitation and strict prescription. And when you look at society like that, things are considerably different, and you turn to see the alphabet soup of government agencies that's out there, and the trillions of dollars that we pour into it each year, it really is awakening. It really will open your eyes to see, and when you realize it's not only local police, but it's local police, county police, state police, federal police, in 100 agencies that have rights over you and blanket powers over you, you realize we've got a long way to go and a lot of work to do. Mm.
Good discussion today on the Generations broadcast as we attempt to find the center line between the two ditches of anarchy on the one side and tyranny on the other. We tend to be edging more towards tyranny and have for the last 100 years of this nation's history. So it's time for Christians to come back to the law of God, the ethical standard, the only possible ethical standard to give us that center line and correct our systems to the standards that only the God of all justice can give to us in his word. Joel McDermott from AmericanVision.com with me on the Generations broadcast today. Joel, thanks for the time. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Kevin.
If you'd like to interact with the radio program, email me directly at host@kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.
If you want the right worldview for your news, you'll want the right worldview for your children's education. That's why we've produced the Worldviews in Conflict curriculum for your teens. It's a curriculum that will equip them to engage the war of the worlds. Check it out at theworldview.com/curriculum. That's theworldview.com/curriculum. It's Wednesday, August 16th, A.D. 2017. This is The Worldview in 5 minutes. I'm Adam McManus. Judge Roy Moore led the pack in yesterday's U.S. Senate race in Alabama. Despite President Donald Trump's endorsement of Luther Strange in the race, Roy Moore secured a strong showing from evangelical conservative voters. With 66% of the vote tabulated at press time, Moore was first with 41%, and Strange came in second with 32%. Since neither secured 50-plus percent, they will face off in a September 26th runoff election. As few as 10% of the Alabama electorate turned out for the special GOP Senate primary to fill the seat left vacant by Attorney General Jeff Sessions. Earlier this year, Judge Roy Moore was removed from his position as Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court for his opposition to homosexual marriage. Two churchgoers were shot and killed as they ascended the front steps to worship at the Chicago Friendship Baptist Church on Sunday, reports the Chicago Tribune. Emmanuel Fleming and Michael Swift were killed as they walked into the church by assailants in bandanas. When the shooting began, Fleming yelled for his three young children to take cover inside the church. All three survived the attack. Chicago is on pace to surpass its record 2016 total of 781 homicides. The city had already passed 400 homicides by late July. James Alex Fields, the 20-year-old man arrested on suspicion of murder, malicious wounding, and hit-and-run charges in Charlottesville, Virginia over the weekend, harbored Nazi sympathies as a teenager, according to the Christian Post. Authorities said Heather Heyer, 32, was killed when Fields' car slammed into a crowd of anti-racism activists confronting neo-Nazis and Ku Klux Klan sympathizers. Both President Trump and Vice President Mike Pence have denounced the racism and the hatred behind this act of violence. Pence made these comments over the weekend during a trip to Colombia.
We will not tolerate hatred and violence of groups like white supremacists, the KKK, and the neo-Nazis. These extremist fringe groups have no place in the American debate.
Since 2007, Life News reports that over 300 babies have survived after their mothers used the abortion pill reversal method. The abortion pill reversal works after a woman has taken the first series of pills for a chemical abortion. Sue Liebel of Pro-Life Women's Caucus told The Worldview that the abortion industry tries to deceive women into thinking that the RU486 abortion is much, quote, safer, unquote, than a regular abortion.
You just take these pills, you go home in the comfort of your home, and you have an abortion at home, and it's supposed to be so easy, when in fact, it is so much more. The complication rate is so much higher. The pain is so much greater. The bleeding is so much more. It's a sham. It's a farce.
Liebel said that states want to make women more aware of the complications from these chemical abortions.
States are trying to get more and more information out about that, as well as the fact that it can be reversed. So if she's sold this idea that it's going to be so easy, and if she takes the first set of pills and then changes her mind, gets scared, regrets it, if quickly enough, we've got doctors all over the country now that have figured out how to reverse that.
Texas Republican Governor Greg Abbott signed a pro-life bill into law yesterday that will keep Texans from having to pay for elective abortions through their insurance plans, reports LifeSite News. And finally, a courageous Scottish missionary is being honored in Budapest, Hungary, for her effort to help Jewish schoolgirls escape Nazi oppression during World War II, reports Christian Today. Jane Haining worked in the Scottish Mission School in Budapest from 1932 until World War II broke out. When Haining was ordered to return home to Scotland by Church of Scotland officials, she refused, stating, quote, "If these children need me in days of sunshine, how much more do they need me in days of darkness?" Unquote. Haining was ultimately arrested in 1944 for protecting her Jewish students from the Nazis. She was taken to Auschwitz-Birkenau, where she died. 1 Corinthians 15:58 says, "My dear brothers and sisters, stand firm. Let nothing move you. Always give yourselves full to the work of the Lord, because you know that your labor in the Lord is not in vain." And that's The Worldview in 5 minutes on this Wednesday, August 16th, in the year of our Lord, 2017. Invite your friends to listen to this unique Christian newscast at theworldview.com. I'm Adam McManus. Seize the day for Jesus Christ. What kind of worldview do your children get? The vast majority of teens from Christian families are abandoning a biblical worldview, according to the Barna Group. Sadly, many parents do not realize that the curriculum they have chosen for their children actually conveys the wrong worldview of history, science, life's purpose, and truth. Pass on the faith to your children with a distinctively Christian education. Check out our Christian discipleship curriculum at theworldview.com/curriculum. That's theworldview.com/curriculum.